Hello and welcome to Radio Linguistica, DGT's knowledge sharing radio broadcast, exploring themes and topics that are relevant to our everyday work. So I have the great pleasure of talking today with Patrick McCarthy and Adrien Vermeys, who are both members of the European Commission's DG GROW, which is the Directorate General for Internal Market, Industry, Entrepreneurship and SMEs. Patrick and Adrien, thank you very much for accepting our invitation.
Thank you, Caroline, for inviting us.
So in DG GROW, you are both members of the team which is behind a website called the EurEurope website, the EurEurope Citizens and the EurEurope Business website, which we call in our jargon the YEC and the YEB website. And it is one of the most visited and one of the most multilingual EU websites, I think. Eh?
That's right. Yeah, well, it is certainly one of the most visited. And we like to think it's one of the best, of course, but for people who don't know what EurEurope is, it's meant to offer kind of practical, actionable, easy to understand answers to questions about their rights under EU law, or for businesses, their obligations under EU law. So it's really concrete stuff. It's like I'm moving to Malta. Can I take my dog with me? Or I'm going to work in Estonia for 9 months. Do I need to change my driver's license? Really practical things like that.
And before managing this website in DG GROW, you had already worked on this website, but in DGT as web translators and as web editor. For Patrick, you were a web editor, and Adrien, you were web translator. And and I was actually at that time lead translator for this website. So I know the website pretty well as well. So you will talk to us about this website, not only as managers of the website, but also as linguists and as translators and as web specialists. And so, yeah, you gave us a few concrete examples of what information you can find on the EurEurope website as a citizen, as a business. What can you find on the website?
Well, actually, there you also have different sections. Again, practical stuff, things you need to know and do when you want to start a business, or about VAT obligations. Actually, that's one of our most visited pages, the rates and the rules for VAT, but also about hiring people, human resources legislation. So very practical stuff.
And what are the figures of the audience? How many people visit the website, and which pages get most visited?
Well, millions and millions every year. EurEurope, it really is a bit of a mirror of what ordinary people are interested in relation to Europe. So, for example, in 2021, was one of our biggest years ever. If I back up a little bit before that, in 2020, if you recall, the pandemic was in full swing. People couldn't travel. And in fact, the travel section on EurEurope Citizens is one of our most popular sections. And so we saw traffic to that drop by, I think, 10% or something like that. But conversely, when people could start traveling again in 2021, I think, beginning of the summer, if I recall correctly, we saw our numbers really go through the roof. And in 2021, we had a bit more than 58 million visits, which put us as, I think, the second website among the EU institutions. You have what we call the commission, what we call the info site, which is ec.europa.eu/info. That's kind of the general commission website where all the DGs have their content. That was number one, but we were number two. And so it's usually, I think, an average year somewhere in the 30 some millions or something like that, but it does go up and down depending on what's going on outside. And as mm-hmm. I said, that's what makes it kind of a nice, an interesting site to work on, is that the traffic to different sections reflects what people are really interested in.
And maybe it's also nice to mention that we always think that people only care about legislation, and EurLex is their go-to place but actually we had more visitors than your Europe, so people only want to know the practical stuff and not necessarily all the details behind it. So
yeah. And how big is the team behind this big website? Who are you? How many are you?
Well, there are 11 of us. So you've got 5 officials and 6 externals. And it's very pleasant to have that kind of mix, you know, because the three of us were fonctionnaires, we're civil servants. So we have one kind of take on things. And then you have the people who work for outside companies. And so it's a mix in the team. The two webmasters are externals. 3 of the editors are externals and 2 are fonctionnaires. And then we've got a communications person, kind of an administrative all-around financial help, and then the team lead. So it's a nice mix of people, 11, good-sized team, not too big, not too small.
And who is dealing with translation? And who's dealing with DGT more specifically in your team?
Well, actually, I am, together with Ilona, our assistant and financial expert. So whereas all the editors can start a translation request, it's actually Ilona or myself that have to validate it and send it to DGT. And we're also in close contact with our favorite planners in DGT planning, Aurel and Eva.
And how do you work? Do you produce the content, or do you revise it, or do you edit it? And where does the content come from? Does it come from DGs, from external authorities?
We do a bit of everything. We do create content from scratch, but that's very rare, I must say. So most of the time we just update the stuff that's already there. I mean, we have our fixed areas that we cover. So when new legislation comes up, we have to, of course, adapt the texts that exist, or sometimes create a new page. And we do this because we follow the legislation, and then we decide to create content based on that. Or more often, we are being approached by DGs or organizations like the Labour Authority to add content or to improve it. So editing is actually, and revising is the main part of our work.
I know that when we first talked, you told me that, for example, Digitech Sud had contacted you about one particular piece of legislation. So could you explain how is the workflow?
Yeah, well, actually there, Tech Sud came to us because, of course, they also see we get a lot of traffic, and they see that the practical stuff on their websites takes a lot of time for them. So they decided to review their entire website, focus only on the policy stuff and the internal sausage making, so to say, and ask us to take care of everything that was actionable, practical information for SMEs and citizens. So we went through their website and we indicated a few pages that they could remove because they were already covered by Your Europe, or that we had to expand on Your Europe in order for them to take it down later. So that's actually an ongoing collaboration with them. And of course, the whole idea is to get as little duplication as possible and to make work easy for them and make our website as comprehensive as possible.
So yeah, so the idea is also to have the information in one place, and preferably Your Europe, and not duplicate information on different websites. Okay.
And that's something if I can jump in, something that Ad mentioned there is kind of very important to our approach, the kind of the line we take, or the approach that we try to sell with the DGs, is that we keep the policy information, the sausage making, the cuisine interne, everything to do with the functioning of the commission, that we keep that on the DG websites, and that we move practical stuff to Your Europe. And it's an advantage. It's an advantage for them too, because we get so much traffic that their content actually is going to be more visible than it might be if it's buried on a DG site with lots of lots of big long pages about legislation and procedures and things like that. So it's kind of a cliche to say it's a win-win situation, but that's how we try and present it to the DGs.
Yeah, I remember translating pages for the Year Europe website on truck drivers. And that came, that came from DG Just, I think.
No, actually, it was DG Employment and even more so the European Labour Authority, ELA. So, yes, the rules on the posting of drivers changed. One of the main elements was that people will now be paid according to the salaries in the countries where they're actually driving their trucks. So that's a big improvement. But it also means that they have to declare all their drivers properly through a central website. And so all these rules had to be put online. And Ella was aware that it was better to have them on the Europe business and citizen site than to create a new website themselves. So that was actually on their initiative, we created together new pages. And those were the pages that had, were translated earlier this year by DGT. And yes, they attracted quite a lot of traffic.
For truck drivers, that's a good word. Sorry.
Not intended. yes, they actually promoted our pages, again, a win-win. With their communication budget, they went out and created social media posts. They actually had a roadside campaign where they went to parking lots with leaflets, very old-fashioned, but it worked. And on those leaflets was a QR code to visit Your Europe. So that's how people actually found the new rules.
Right. And how do you make a dry, boring piece of legislation into a web text that is readable, that is enticing, that is concise? What are your tactics? What are your techniques?
Well, less is more, of course. You only need to write what's actually necessary. So it usually means you can scrap quite a lot. And sometimes, and that's where it gets difficult, you can imagine with policy officers who've been working on a proposal for years, and every word is important. And then we come up with a page that has just 5 or 10 lines on it. For them, that's impossible to understand. But yes, keeping it short, keeping it simple. Very important, using the words that people actually Google, because those are not the words that are in the legislation. These are different words. So.
Yeah, I think this is called, isn't that called search engine optimization, SEO?
Exactly.
Could you tell us more about that?
Well, it boils down to using the words that people actually look. So when you go to Google, you enter a search term that comes to your mind spontaneously without even knowing the topic. So as an editor or as, even as a translator, you can use the same tactic and think of the content and think what words you would use or what words you would find on other websites for big audiences. And if you've come up with a few synonyms, you can actually check this by going to a website like Google Trends. You type in those words and then you get a clear graph. You can even compare them, 2 or 3 keywords. You can compare them and you can see that what is in the legislation may not be used at all in your country or is not the term that people enter in Google to search content. So that's actually a very good test.
Okay, so it's called Google Trends, Google Trends. And do you have an example, maybe with the word driver or another word, other terms that, you have the legal term that nobody uses, and then you have the everyday term that we should have on our websites?
Yes, actually, in the same context of the truck drivers, we noticed that in the legislation, the word for driver, well, in English, we only have one word, driver, whether it's in legislation or in news articles, there's no more official word for this, unless you have very archaic words. But in many languages, and I can take Dutch as an example, you have two words. One is bestuurder or conducteur in French. But imagine you're looking for a job, or you want to know something about your contract as a driver. You would never enter the word bestuurder. You're not going to tell your neighbor, look, what do you do for a living? Yes, I'm a bestuurder. No, you'd never say that.
Okay.
Then you would use chauffeur.
So
even though the legislation that we get from our requesters, the DGs or ELA, and even if the suggestions from the translation memory, for instance, would say driver becomes bestuurder, conducteur, this is where you have to think twice and say, let's check this, do a quick search on the keyword, and if you can find a better alternative like chauffeur, and this is the word you need to use, and this will actually reflect on the number of visits you get, because if you don't use the right words in your text, your page will not show up in the search results, or at least not in the first few search results. So
yeah, which means they don't exist. Eh? If you're not in the three, four
beyond the first
top,
page,
yes.
We all know. Yeah.
And do you get feedback from users about languages on the website? Are they happy with it? And also, which languages get most visited?
Well, yeah, to be fair, we do get a lot of feedback, but rarely about the language, I must say.
Okay.
Although we did get quite some targeted feedback, again, about the drivers. ELA organized a review among their target audience, because for them it was an important campaign. They wanted to know whether the drivers and the road transport companies were actually visiting them and what they thought about them. So they went out to trade unions, business organizations, and they did have some comments on exactly the terminology. So this is where we got our example from. But the feedback that we get directly through the feedback form on Your Europe is mostly about contents. So things that are not clear, that are a bit ambiguous. So
language is not an issue, meaning that it's probably that it's fine language-wise.
And most of all, it's there. Because to answer your other question, what languages get most visits? If we would look at all the native speakers in Europe, you would expect that around 12-13% would be English native speakers. So you would say, ideally, around the same percentage of pages visited would be in English and all the rest would be in other languages. We found out that actually around 18% of all our visited pages are English pages, which means that more people than just the native speakers actually visit English. But still, 18% English, that means that more than 80% of all the other visits are actually going to translated pages. So we do see from our visits that people actually Google in their native language and that they do land on a translated Your Europe page. So yes, the translations are very valuable and equally visited across all languages.
Okay.
Well, of course, taking into account the population and the number of native speakers.
And I know that there is a regulation behind Your Europe. I think it was adopted in 2018 and it sets a number of obligations. Can you tell us more, just in a few words, about this legislation that is behind the website?
Sure, that piece of legislation is a regulation, and it's referred to as the Single Digital Gateway Regulation. And as you said, it took effect in 2018. Your Europe has been around for a long time, but that regulation has come and kind of given a legal basis where there wasn't one before. And what it's about, it's really obligations on the member states in terms of the information that they put online. The first big deadline under this regulation was at the end of 2020, and at that time, member states had to put online information about certain administrative procedures, kind of, again, always from the perspective of a cross-border user or, you know, someone from another EU state, an EU member state that was living in their country. And so the annex to this regulation has a whole list of topics on which member states have to put information online. A lot of that information, or some of it, used to be on Your Europe. We used to have national pages that the editors maintained with the help of people in the member states. But this regulation took that obligation and took that content away from us and put it out there for the member states to do. And in addition, and this is where it gets a little bit more relevant for us and for translators, that content also should be translated into a commonly understood foreign language. So that, mm-hmm. again, is meant to open up that information, make it available for a wider audience. I mentioned that first deadline of 2020. By the end of 2023, there are a number of procedures that the member states have to make it possible to carry out online. So it's a smaller list than the topics about which they have to provide information, but also It's a big concrete step forward in the sense that you, as a citizen of an EU member state, if you're living or you want to live somewhere else, that you can do certain fundamental things like renewing a driver's license, or that you can do that online. And so the regulation obliges the member states to notify the Commission of the existence of these websites. Where are they? And then we at Your Europe, we've got a specially designed search function that people can use to find that information via our site. And so this is how the Your Europe website is sort of playing the role of this gateway, or the front end of it, if you like to use a kind of a IT kind of term. We help people find that information. It's just that the information is now moved from Your Europe to national websites. And there's more information, or there will be more information than there was previously on Your Europe. Mm-hmm.
So you link now to this information, but you don't store it.
Exactly. So a lot of pages were removed from Your Europe, but mm-hmm. in return, we now have this repository which is growing rapidly, over 50,000 web pages across all EU countries are now stored in this repository. Mm-hmm, and if mm-hmm. you do a search, you can find those national pages and vice versa. On all of these pages, they mention that they are part of this single digital gateway called Your Europe. Which by this piece of legislation was also assigned as the official language in all languages.
We've already mentioned that when I talked with Daniel Proux from DigiCom.
Exactly.
That it was decided in this legislation that Your Europe could no longer be translated in all languages, that it had to be a brand that could be used all over Europe in the same language. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if you're on a national page of your national authority and it's a topic that concerns traveling abroad, on this page, it will say you can also find EU-level information or information on other countries by going to Your Europe, and it has the Your Europe logo there with a link to the Your Europe site. So it's really a big network of websites now under the flag of Your Europe.
For the Your Europe website, you rely on DGT translators for the quality of the different language versions on the site. What do you expect from DGT translators? We know that what is really specific about web translation is that it is user-centric. What would you advise DGT translators to do to make sure that we get optimal quality for Your Europe?
Yeah, of course, we know all translators are under an enormous pressure mm-hmm. to produce. Production mm-hmm. has become more important than quality. Unfortunately, what we would like to see is that the suggestions that come from the translation memory, even though they might be 100% match, it would be good if the translators would have a second look and think, is this how I would write it myself if I'd had to write it from scratch? And most of the times it will be okay. And actually, we do give a lot of references. We try always to give the old dossier numbers. Mm-hmm. So retrievals are accurate. They are coming from web content and not legislation. But still, if time allows, it would be good to read it again and think about synonyms that are more user-friendly, more more not colloquial, but at least more everyday language and not legalese, avoid legalese. And when in doubt, I know we always have to use the institutional style guide as translators. But there's also something called the web guide, which is on DGCOM's website, where you can find tips and tricks to use clear language. And actually, I think the clear language campaign that DGT runs in itself doesn't only help web translation, it helps every translation. So clear and simple is what it needs to be.
And that's what we do when we draft the content, or we try to do when we draft the content in English as well. Huh? It's really, I think it's, as Ad was saying, it's kind of taking off your hat as a commissioned fonctionnaire, somebody with an advanced degree and who's very passionate about their field of expertise, and trying to think and write or translate like a normal person. I make air quotes with my fingers, a normal person. So something that somebody who's not like us, somebody who's an ordinary person, doesn't know anything about EU law, doesn't really even care what's going on here in Brussels, that a person like that can look at this text, this, whether it's in English or any other language, and say, ah, okay, I understand this. It just makes sense to me. It's got the words in it that I would use if I were talking about this subject. And I look at this information and I can do something with it. You know, that it's, and again, as Zad said, it's got everything there that needs to be there, but nothing more. That's what we aim for. So that's what we try to expect of ourselves is editors and writers, and we would ask the translators to try and do too, as their, you know, as their time and their resources allow.
I know that when I translate web content, I always have in mind, you know, the busy and impatient user that we all are on the internet. You know, we want the information super quickly. You know, our attention span is of about, I don't know, 0.5 seconds. So yeah, we have to be extra clear and extra concise. Yeah, Adrian, you wanted to add something.
Actually, looking at the figures, people do actually spend almost a minute, I think, on your Europe when they visit us, which is not bad, which means they actually read something. So, but yeah.
1 minute seems a lot to me. So that means they're really interested and they're really looking for information, and they take the time to look for information on your Europe here.
Yeah. Okay. And on average, they click 1.8 times, which means that they see less than two pages. So that's really the aim. They need to come to our website and find the information they need on that page. It also means, of course, if they don't find it after 1.8 pages, they leave. But yeah, again, as Patrick says, all the information that needs to be there, clear and simple and nothing else. And this is also, well, we don't promote free translation very much. Of course, it's always risky to start changing things. But if you think you can reduce it a bit or avoid duplication in your translation, because we never know what the English might look like in other languages, we do encourage translators to rewrite the sentence, actually.
Can I drop the term trediting that we used to throw around?
Yes. Trediting, translation plus editing, yes.
There's only one area that I can mention now where we shouldn't do this, because what we also have on Your Europe are sample stories. And these are stories that actually happened and that were proposed to us by our colleagues from Your Europe Advice, where they do give personal advice for practical problems. So they're not just invented stories about fictitious people in a random country. So even though it's tempting to change it and localize the sample story by changing the first name of the person or the country.
That's not a good idea.
That's not a good idea, because then you're actually changing the story the real life story that actually happened.
Yeah, I remember translating that. I think in French it's called Histoire vécue. Yeah, I know that you are organizing an info session in December. Maybe you can tell us a few words about that.
Yeah, very soon already on the 15th of December in the morning, we will be visiting DGT in person, and it will be streamed to Luxembourg, I think. And so then we will also answer any further questions that the colleagues in DGT may have. We're really looking forward to seeing our old colleagues again and meet up in person again. So that could be interesting. We'll basically be saying answering the same questions you've already asked us, but we're happy to give more examples or answer any detailed questions or even about specific dossiers. And then we can also maybe tell what could be in the pipeline for next year. So yeah, we're looking forward to that.
It will be interesting to know, yeah, what DGT should expect from you in terms of translation for the months to come. Eh bien, merci beaucoup. Merci beaucoup d'avoir pris un petit peu de temps pour nous parler à la DGT de
Your
Europe.
Ah oui, c'est avec grand plaisir, évidemment.
Merci encore pour l'invitation et pour l'intérêt pour Your Europe. Donc, merci, un grand merci.
Un grand merci à vous. Et donc, on vous retrouve le 15 décembre à la rue de Genève pour une infosession sur Your Europe.
Parfait.
Bonne journée.
Au revoir.
À bientôt. Au revoir.
À bientôt.